Truth Seekers, Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. Stick around. We have some interesting things on the menu tonight, including an Uncle Mike Story Corner, one of the favorite segments of this program. And also some more veteran stuff. I'm not sure what's going on here. This blatant attack on American veterans by Republicans. Surely they understand that this is going to come back and beat them up, don't they? This kind of nonsense. Like him or hate him, McCain is a veteran. I don't understand why Republicans are attacking veterans, especially these younger guys who have gone to Iraq or Afghanistan. Primarily Iraq, and have seen the lies that are being perpetrated on the American people, not to mention the Iraqi people, about the entire situation there. They're coming back, these veterans, after one, two, three, maybe four tours of combat duty, and they're saying this has got to stop. And they join organizations like VoteVets.org, for example. Or they organize themselves into lobbying groups that try to get members of the Senate and the House to do things like, support the new GI Bill of Rights. These are soldiers who went into one of the most damaging conflicts, in relatively speaking, that the U.S. has gotten itself involved in since World War II. All of these wars that we've gotten involved in, never with a declaration of war by the U.S. Congress as per the U.S. Constitution, but as the result of actions by some psychopath or partial psychopath or sociopath or corporate controlled crony in the White House. But I repeat myself there. I'm sorry. But the attack on these young Iraqi vets being led by a certain cadre of Democrats is just, or I'm sorry, Republicans, is just an outrage. The latest is the senator from Texas, John Cornyn. And we'll get to that. Well, let's get to that first, since I brought it up. Cornyn is very pissed off about an ad running in Texas. And other places, I guess. It's in Texas. It's a TV ad put together by Iraq veterans and by this organization, VetVoice.com. There are several of them. It's the blog for Vote Vets, but this one is VetVoice.com. Same thing. They put together this ad, and I saw the ad today. There are three or four Iraq combat veterans saying that John Cornyn should do more to support veterans. Now, what they're talking about is Cornyn's lack of enthusiasm, and that's putting it mildly, for the so-called Webb-Hagel GI Bill. Now, Webb, the senator, Jim Webb, the senator from Virginia, who was a Republican, I guess, or an independent, he was the Secretary of Navy in the Reagan administration, and served in Vietnam. Chuck Hagel, Vietnam vet. Here are two combat veterans. One a Democrat now and one a Republican co-sponsoring this bill. Cornyn, this chicken hawk, another Republican who ran and hid his lily white ass during the Vietnam conflict, which is not necessarily a bad thing, except when you consider that these chicken hawks, the ones that ran and hid, were great vocal advocates of the war, just not with them involved in it. You go fight, dark skin bro. You go fight, poor white American. Me? No, I got more important things to do than go get involved in this cheesy war. You know, like Cheney. Like Bush. Like every single member of the Republican Party leadership. They're skunks. That's all. They're just skunks. They're more than happy to see somebody else go fight and die for the most obtuse of reasons, mainly to protect corporate America, but they won't do it. You see? Okay. So, the Webb-Hagel GI Bill is an attempt to provide some benefits similar to those given to soldiers who returned from World War II. The old GI Bill included in that list of benefits is help for college tuition. You're not going to go to Yale or Harvard the way returning World War II vets could go if they pass the entrance exams. No. You'll go to a state university. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But the difference here is this bill, as good of an idea as it is, it's still on the cheap compared to what World War II vets had 50 years ago. But that's not good enough for Cornyn. Cornyn hates the military. All Republicans hate the military. They use the military as a wedge issue. On the dumbasses out here in the great unwashed, that would be us who cast votes, they use it as a tool against us because they see us as dumbasses. But they hate the military. They will accuse Democrats of not supporting the military. What administration in modern history has done more damage to the U.S. military than any other? Ding! You're right. The Bush-Cheney administration. Republicans hate the military and they hate the soldiers. They want the soldiers, the wounded ones, to go away. Go away! Just get out of my face. No, you're not going to get college. No, you're not going to get rehabilitation. No, you're not going to get occupational therapy. Just go away. Can't you go get a job someplace in McDonald's? What? Your wheelchair gets in the way? Well, you know, not my problem, booby. But let somebody step out and say to youth in America, you're out of your minds to join this military because of what it's doing and how it's been ripped and shredded by people like Rumsfeld and Cheney and, John Cornyn. Anyone who suggests that this military has been ripped to pieces is immediately labeled by Republicans, you're supporting the enemy, you don't support the troops. And yet, when they're given a chance to support the troops, invariably, always, every single time, I defy anyone listening to this program to prove me wrong. Every single time a bill comes up to take care of the people coming back from these goddamn miserable actions, especially in Iraq, the Republicans turn tail and run. They spit on veterans. They treat them with the kind of disrespect that are in the apocryphal stories they made up about returning vets from Vietnam. Republicans prove over and over, every single day on issue after issue, that they are nothing but scum. Scum. And where it concerns young men and young women who never joined to go into the military to go into this kind of nonsense, when these Republicans dump repeatedly on them, and finally, the vets start to organize and say, well, you know, something's got to be done here. So vote vets put together this ad. You can see it at vetvoice.com. Vetvoice.com. Just go there and scroll down. It's a 30-second ad. Well, Cornyn has his underpants in a wad about this because the ad says, at the very end, it just says, you know, call John Cornyn's office and tell him to support veterans benefits or support this new GI Bill. And that has Cornyn all in a dither because he hates the military. He hates veterans. He loves war. He loves destruction and death, like all Republicans, but he hates having to deal with the veterans. Now, more of this when we come back after the break. This really, really, really pisses me off. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy.
If I just had other priorities, like feeling more at ease, I'd say bomb them to hell, but I'd rather not be Kentucky Fried.
Chicken Hawk.
Call me a Chicken Hawk.
Chicken Hawk.
Proud to be a Chicken Hawk. Watch while I bring the mock. Receive to all the rock. I didn't walk the walk, but I can talk the talk.
Walk, 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 walk.
Why did the chicken cross the road? Well, I'll tell you part. The chicken crossed the road to join the Texas Air National Guard. Roll call.
Bush.
Roll.
We are redefining war on our terms.
God, I hate this guy. 21 past the hour. So anyway, the ad put together by veterans, by actual combat veterans, at vetvoice.com or votevets.org. You can go, if you want to see it, go to vetvoice.com. There, go there and you can see the ad. At the very end, it tells the voters in Texas to call Cornyn's office and suggest that he supports a veteran. So Cornyn, according to roll call newspaper, roll call, whatever it is, in D.C. Cornyn, the Cornyn campaign, he's up for re-election, dismisses the charges of VoteVets.org as unfounded. Unfounded. That's not true. They're very founded. A Cornyn campaign spokesman, Kevin McLaughlin, another Republican chicken hawk, they are under every rock that you look, said the following, quote, the anti-war crowd is determined to use our men and women in uniform for their political advantage, even if our national security is jeopardized in the process, end quote. Now, the entire sentence is total bat crap. In the first place, the anti-war crowd involved in this campaign are combat veterans, you dumbass. They are combat veterans, something you, Kevin McLaughlin, and you, John Cornyn, will never, in your protected lily-white lives, ever understand. And to say, as this spokes-geek said, using men and women in uniform for their political advantage, you rat bastard, these vets put this together because they are looking for benefits for what they did. They gave up an arm, an eye. They gave up their ability to walk or see. For this nutball in the White House, George Bush, and this super nutball that hides in holes, Dick Cheney, so that people like you, McLaughlin, and you, Cornyn, can make these kind of half-assed statements. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. See, I believe that with some of these insults that are handed out, I don't support this war. I do not. Or this occupation or invasion, whatever the hell you want to call it. Absolutely. And I don't think there's a soldier out there who does either. I really don't. They're in uniform. They have to do what they've told. They've signed a contract. And then these war pigs, Bush and Cheney, do this to them. But the thing is, for me, I'm too primitive, I guess. I'm just too gut level primitive. I would like to beat the living hell out of people who make statements like this. And any of you right wing bloggers who want to quote me on that, quote me on. I don't give a goddamn. For these Republican cowards, these Republican officers, these cowards, to hide behind the flag and their lapel pins and their Bibles and whatever the hell else they hide behind and make these kinds of statements about men and women who have been in combat zones, risked their lives for a screwy, weird Republican foreign policy. And then you bastards have the audacity to say these things about these veterans. I'd like to beat your asses. I'll tell you right now, I would like to just pound you into the ground. I don't care who you are. I don't care what your position is. You're cowards and you stink, and you're stinking up this country. And you certainly have stunk up the U.S. military. Damn all of you. Damn all of you. And I'm not surprised. I am surprised every day when I read the paper. And no, didn't happen today. A veteran didn't wig out and go try to take down some of these Republican jackasses. Now it has happened. Hasn't it? Like Timothy McVeigh, maybe? Only he picked the wrong target, didn't he? He went after civilians. He went after people who did not set the policies. But that's what happens, you see. You scum suckers, you right-wing Republican scum suckers, you really are. It's just lower than low. To do this, to support and vote for these adventures overseas that result in hundreds of thousands of people dying, you scum, and putting our soldiers who belong back in National Guard and Reserve units do not belong as frontline combat units. Now, somebody like Cornyn and his little spokes geek don't understand that. Neither does Bush, neither does Cheney. They've never served in the military. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. Jim Webb and Chuck Hagel, who came up with the new GI Bill, and this guy Rick Noriega, who is John Cornyn's opponent in the reelection, and VoteBets.org, whose veterans created the ad, have, not surprisingly, all of these people I've just mentioned have served in a war. Yet they're called the anti-war crowd, according to the Cornyn campaign. John Cornyn was vehemently against serving in anything himself, but he has the audacity to say this. I swear, I swear that I'm too raw, I'm too primitive, I'm too much of a knuckle dragger myself. I don't understand why these people are just not pounded into a hole somewhere. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
I'm writers and critics who prophesize with your pen. And keep your eyes wide.
To be in solidarity as best as I can with them, and I think, you know, playing golf during a war, it just sends the wrong signal.
Scum. They're all scum, all these Republicans. Anyway, back to this ad, excuse me, that Vote Vets or Vet Voice put together. They're running it in Texas as part of a challenge to John Cornyn's Senate seat from Rick Noriega. And the ad is pretty straightforward. If you haven't had a chance to look at it yet, you can go look at it. It's at vetvoice.com. Cornyn responds by calling these people anti-war. Of course they're anti-war, you dumbass. But he refers to soldiers here, the combat veterans, as the anti-war crowd. Which is an honorable place to be. That's an honorable group to hang out with, Cornyn. What's the opposite of anti-war crowd? War pigs. Which is what Cornyn is, as long as somebody else is doing the shooting and the bleeding and leaving arms and limbs and eyes and kidneys and livers behind on some godforsaken battlefield someplace, right? But that's how Republicans are. That's the way they've always been. Vogtvedt goes on to say, as far as his accusation, Cornyn's accusation, that we're the ones jeopardizing national security, Cornyn actually takes the cake on this one. Vogtvedt writes, he's the one who kept us in this disastrous war in Iraq. He's the one who supported policies that have nearly bled the army dry. He's the one preoccupied with the Shia-Sunni strife in Iraq while terrorism flourishes in Afghanistan. He's the one who voted against giving our troops proper rest and recovery periods, thus weakening our military. And he's the one who's prepared to kill military recruiting by keeping the GI Bill weak enough to prevent recruiters from using it as a viable carrot. In fact, Cornyn's policies are the reason that 60% of the military's officers believe, quote, the military is weaker than it was 5 years ago, end quote. Cornyn is a veritable champion when it comes to weakening our national security, as are all Republicans. All modern Republicans, the last 50, 60 years, every single Republican is a coward, a sneak, a cheat, and hates the military, hates the soldiers, sees them as nothing more than cannon fodder. And somehow they have convinced media and themselves that the Democrats don't support the military. Anything that has ever been done to benefit veterans has come from Democrats. Not one single item has ever been introduced as a bill passed by Republicans. Not one. Ever. Ah, you rat bastards. Now, parades again. Get this. There's a parade in Washington, D.C., down Constitutional Avenue, past landmarks that include the Washington Monument and the White House that has become nothing but a house of ill repute for these filthy Republicans. And Veterans for Peace, according to the AP, Veterans for Peace, another organization, was initially granted a spot in this parade. But some candy-ass corporate-sponsored organization called American Veterans Center, the organization that organizes the parade, has pulled the approval, saying that Veterans for Peace expresses political viewpoints and the parade is not to express political viewpoints. These sons of bitches, what is a Veterans Day parade other than a political statement? What is it? Well, somebody tell me what it is. So here's a response to that. Anthony Teolis, who is a treasurer of the Veterans for Peace Memorial Chapter in the Washington, D.C. area, said today, quote, we received a letter that we were in the parade, and then the invitation got pulled. We have some World War II vets in our chapter, and we've lost 7 in the last year, so we want to make sure that they especially can participate. Other groups that are very political but are pro-war, like the American Legion, are participating. Some of the sponsors of the parade are CACI, Booz Allen Hamilton, Raytheon, United Technologies, corporations that support war. I, the treasurer said, I am a disabled Vietnam War veteran, and I have visited Walter Reed Hospital numerous times, and it saddened me to see young men and women having to face the realization of the future, where they are missing limbs, eyesight, dealing with traumatic brain injury, and PTSD. They are not getting the help that they need from the military hospitals or Veterans Administration hospitals. End quote. And this group is being told, Truth Seeker, listen to me, damn it! They're being told they can't march in the parade. They're combat vets, and they're being told they can't march in the parade because they'll make a political statement, as if Raytheon, United Technologies, are not all about pro-war, pro-death, pro-dismemberment, incinerating children, blowing up our soldiers, you bastards. And then Michael McPherson, who is with VeteransForPeace.net, said, quote, "We've had this happen to other chapters because we are against the war and the occupation in Iraq. Our members have children who are in Iraq. We are not being excluded because we are political, as the parade organizers are claiming. We are being excluded because we're supporting the troops and not the war or the occupation. Other groups with political views, including political parties, are allowed to participate. This is supposed to be about publicly honoring the loss and sacrifice of our fallen brothers and sisters, and we are veterans who are being prevented from doing that." My God. I got an email from somebody after one of my veterans' rants and said, "Boy, you sound like you're just absolutely pro-war." And I was going to write back and say, "Oh, you sound like you're absolutely a dumbass." But, you know, why bother? Why bother? I'm no more pro-war than somebody who has been in a combat situation. On this particular issue, though, these are people, for whatever reason, I don't care if they signed up gung-ho to go kill some fill-in-the-blank. I don't care. They went there. They saw what it was. They experienced it. They had their bodies shot at, their minds shredded. They come home and they say, "Wait a minute. I'm against war." Who can better decide about the relative merits or demerits of fighting a particular battle or war or occupation than somebody who has been on the giving and receiving end of a weapon? Who? Some pig like John Cornyn? Some piece of human offal like Rush Limbaugh? Some coward like a Dick Cheney? Please. Over and over and over again it happens, doesn't it? This Saturday, in Washington, D.C., where this march is going to occur, the Democratic National Committee's Rules and Bylaws Committee will meet. Now, the Rules and Bylaws Committee will consider challenges that have been filed pursuant to the 2008 Delegate Selection Rules and Regulations concerning the seating of delegations from Florida and Michigan. Huh? Right? Huh? According to the committee's regulations, Democratic National Committee's regulations, each challenger, wonder who that would be, will be entitled to present an oral argument for a period of 15 minutes each. A representative from each state party and from each presidential campaign will also have an opportunity to address the committee regarding each of the challenges. Following a lunch break, committee members will consider and debate the challenges. I wonder what kind of a ploy Hillary Clinton is going to use this time.
Faster than a flying monkey, more powerful than a special prosecutor, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Now, that wasn't a parting shot when we're going into the break about Hillary Clinton. I am curious what sort of a tactic she's going to come up with now. She's in Florida talking with people about the votes down, counting the votes down there. And she says the same thing in Michigan. It's really kind of, and Kathy was elaborating on this last night, it's the old Soviet Union style, you know, one name on the ballot, especially in Michigan, and I don't give a damn who took their name off or what the rules were or whatever. The Democratic National Committee, which determines the rules, said that the primaries would be held before or after a certain date, and nobody was to violate that. Now, I happen to think that's kind of Soviet also. But they all agreed to it. And now, Hillary Clinton, I mean, why don't you hear Barack Obama screaming this? Tell me that. Is that because Barack Obama hates one person, one vote? Is that because Barack Obama wants to see votes suppressed? Is that? I don't remember Bill Clinton, after the polls closed and it became apparent that Florida was being sucked into the Bush column, I don't remember Bill Clinton coming out and just screaming his guts out and ordering his Justice Department to start counting the votes and telling the Supreme Court to go pound sand up its collective rear ends while the Justice Department said, wait a minute. No, I don't remember Clinton doing that. Do you? No, I don't think so. But Hillary Clinton is talking, oh, well, every vote's got to count. Now, she is comparing the uncounted votes of Michigan and Florida to what happened in Zimbabwe. Son of a bitch. This is mind-boggling. This is mind-boggling. Clinton explained she was in, she was talking to some old folks. She said it's wrong when, her words, people go through the motions of an election only to have them discarded and disregarded. She went on to say, we're seeing that right now in Zimbabwe. Tragically, an election was held. The president lost. They refused to abide by the will of the people. End quote. She was talking to a crowd of senior citizens at a retirement community in South Florida. She went on to say, quote, so, we can never take for granted our precious right to vote. It is the single most important privilege and right any of us have because in that ballot box, we are all equal. You're equal to a billionaire. You're equal to a president. She's kidding. End quote. She's kidding, right? Now, in just one day, according to CBS News, Clinton used a variety of arguments to convince her party to seat Florida and Michigan delegates, going so far as to compare the struggles of the voters in Florida and Michigan. Are they struggling? Okay. To those of abolitionists, suffragists, and now the people of Zimbabwe. And then she told this crowd, quote, I think people across Florida and Michigan are thinking to themselves, well, if the Democrats don't want my vote, maybe John McCain and the Republicans do. We can't let that happen. I mean, this is insane. What is she suggesting to these people? That come election day, they can't vote? Is that what she's saying? No, what she's talking about is bending the rules for the Clintons yet again. But to compare what happened by this murderous tyrant Mugabe in Zimbabwe to the Democratic National Committee saying primaries have to be held before or after this date, and then the Florida Republican-controlled Florida General Assembly saying, well, we're going to hold the primary on this date, and then the voters go, what do I do? What do I do? Well, I don't know. Let's go. Okay, well, but wait a minute. No, I don't know. Stand over here. No, this way. No, turn right. Turn left. Upside down. Where are we going? So Hillary Clinton steps in and says, well, you know, this is just like Zimbabwe. No, Mrs. Clinton, it isn't. It's not even close. It's not even on the same planet as what's going on in Zimbabwe. And how dare you compare the machinations of the Democratic Party and your campaign with the murder and genocide and rape and killing and starvation and poverty and babies dying in Zimbabwe? How dare you? You know what you are, Hillary? You're a Republican. Oh, you're a Republican. My God. Zimbabwe? Do you remember James Baker, former Secretary of State for Slappy Bush? George Herbert Walker, weaker worker Bush. Remember James Baker? There's a video clip of him that is making the rounds on the internet, and it provides an interesting counterpoint to this argument over whether it is proper to talk to one's enemies. Barack Obama has said he would sit down and talk with the leadership of these countries that George Bush has labeled the axis of evil. And some other ones, too, like, I don't know, Chavez, another country whose government we've tried to overthrow and murder in order to get our hands on their oil. Not you and me. I'm talking about Bush and Cheney. And, of course, that's called appeasement. But James Baker, the former Secretary of State for Slappy Bush, has a point of view that's different from that. We'll tell you about it when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Malloy. James Baker, former Secretary of State to Slappy Bush, George W. Bush's father. no, not his grandfather, not the Nazi simp, but the other one. Baker was on Fox News, Hannity and Combs, about a year and a half ago. He was interviewed by one of those two idiots, and the interview now has been put on YouTube, among other places. Now, a little background: you remember when Chuckle Nuts started a furor when he told the Israeli parliament last week that negotiating with terrorists and radicals such as Iran was, quote, the false comfort of appeasement. End quote. And of course, he went on from there, accusing specifically, although indirectly, he never mentioned his name, Barack Obama and Democrats back here in the states, Democrats, capital D, of engaging in that sort of activity, appeasing our enemies. Now, this is obviously a typical ploy by these filthy Republicans, cowards and chicken hawks, every single one of them. But for some reason, you see, the American public has bought into this. They buy into it. Jesus God, why do we do this? Well, McCain jumped on the wagon. He saw, oh, yeah, that's a good one, my friends. I really like that one, my friends. And he said about Obama, quote, why does Senator Obama want to sit down with a state sponsor of terrorism? What does Senator Obama want to talk about with Ahmadinejad? End quote. McCain asked reporters. Now, Barack Obama never said he would sit down with Ahmadinejad. And as we pointed out last night, McCain is such a dumbass, such an ignorant old fart, that he doesn't understand, apparently, who the real ruler of Iran is. It damn sure is not Ahmadinejad. But don't bring that up with McCain. It'll just confuse him even further. Anyway, in this interview, October 6, 2006, on Hannity and Colbert, Fox News, James Baker emphatically tosses the notion aside that talking with enemies, even state sponsors of terrorism, is any sort of appeasement. This is what Baker said, quote, you don't just talk to your friends, you talk to your enemies as well. Diplomacy involves talking to your enemies. You don't reward your enemies necessarily by talking to them. If you're tough and you know what you're doing, you don't appease them. Talking to an enemy is not, in my view, appeasement. End quote. And then he went on. Baker went on. Now, remember, James Baker doesn't talk about this kind of stuff without clearing it with Pappy Bush, Slappy Bush. Remember, also, there is this Grecian tragedy unfolding in the Bush family. If these people could get away with it, they would be knifing each other. The Bush boys, the old lady who runs this clan, the cousins, the sons, and of course, sitting on top of this heap of moldering, disgusting flesh is Slappy Bush. But these people are like some kind of a Greek tragedy, something acted out in a little amphitheater someplace in Athens, how many thousands of years ago? You know, it's filthy because the rest of the world has to suffer while they work through their melodrama. You want proof? Baker said that when he was Secretary of State for Slappy Bush, he made 15 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. 15 trips to Syria in 1990 and 1991. Quote, at the time when Syria was on the list of countries who were state sponsors of terrorism. On the 16th trip, Baker said, guess what? Lo and behold, Syria changed 25 years of policy and agreed for the first time in history to sit at the table with Israel, which is what Israel wanted at the time, end quote. And then Baker concluded, sitting with these two twits, Hannity and Combs, Baker said, all I am, quote, all I'm saying, that would never have happened if we hadn't been sufficiently dedicated that we were going to keep at it. End quote. Oh, I hate Republicans. God, they make me sick. Baker's not a Republican. Baker is a corporatist. Baker is a corporatist. That's all he is. Baker doesn't give a tinker's damn who is in the White House. He doesn't care of what party is in control. He doesn't give a damn who gets elected to the House or the Senate. He doesn't care who's on the Supreme Court. And the reason he doesn't is because James Baker understands a truism that most Americans just can't get through our punkin' little heads. And that is, we live in a corporate state. These illusions of democracy and voting and selecting our leaders are simply that. Illusions. So Baker can speak the truth. By the way, he's endorsed McCain. But Baker can sit there and speak the truth. He can say, nah, you're out of your mind. You know, what are you talking about? If you don't go talk to your enemies, how are you going to do business with him? That's all he's trying to say. Baker doesn't come at this from a peace and justice and love and let's all hold hands point of view. No. He comes at it from strictly a pragmatic corporatist point of view, which is simply this. You can't do business with people you're bombing. That's all. It's very simple. You can't do it. It can't be done. Exhibit number one. Let me think. Iraq! So Baker doesn't give a damn. He doesn't care who's, you know, who's in power. He likes McCain because he understands that McCain is very malleable to the corporate point of view. That's all. And Obama, he's not sure about him. Hillary, okay. But McCain is, James Baker is a sexist pig. He doesn't want to see Hillary Clinton. She's abroad. Jesus Christ. We can't have that. And the other fellow, what? He's a Negro, right? No. I'm going with McCain. Man. You know, I said the other night, I spend too much time lately nosing around the Israeli press, and I did it again today. Ynet, that's the letter Y, ynetnews.com, ynetnews.com, based in Israel, all sorts of news for Israelis and issues that pertain to Jews globally, but especially for Israelis. They had this this in today. There's something called the Global Peace Index. Ever heard about that? It is the index was launched under the auspices of the Institute for Economics and Peace, which is a think tank that looks at the relationship between economics, business, and peace. Sounds like James Baker would be a part of that, right? But that's what it is. Supporters of this index urge policymakers in they don't care what country, they just urge all policymakers in various countries to focus more on education, wealth, well-functioning government, and they point toward the role of business, i.e. corporations, in creating more stability. So this is a pro-business organization. This is a James Baker, Carlyle Group kind of organization, the so-called Institute for Economics and Peace. I mean, it's a giveaway in their name, right? It's not an institute for justice and peace. It's not an institute for truth, honesty, and peace. It's an institute for economics and peace. Economics, I'm a bitch. How do those two? All right. Now, they have come up with a list of they rank the nations of the world. They ranked, I think, 140 countries in relation to its peace index. Now, I guess they're referring to peace, again, not in the sense of, let's be brothers and sisters, but in the sense of, let's shut up, goddammit, sit down, stop killing so we can do business. When we come back, I'll tell you where a couple of nations ranked. Oh, you're way ahead of me. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Talk radio matters here.
Don't need no long Cadillac. I don't want nobody with no problem.
21 past the hour. Roz in Canada says this was announced on the Canadian Broadcasting, CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation News this morning. I don't know. Maybe it was announced here in the U.S. I haven't watched any TV today, so I don't know. But here it is, the Global Peace Index. And this was in ynetnews.com, based in Israel. Israel is ranked 136 out of 140, alongside Afghanistan and Chad. It says the headline at ynetnews.net is Global Peace Index: Israel hits rock bottom. And it goes on to say, Iceland is the world's most peaceful nation. Israel ranks 136 out of 140, according to the Global Peace Index. The United States is 97th out of 140 countries, according to how peaceful they were domestically and how they interacted with the outside world. That's what this is based on. The U.S. slipped. Last year we were 96. This year we're 97. But we're still ahead of Iran, which ranked 105th. However, Belarus, Cuba, South Korea, Chile, Libya, and others were listed as more peaceful than the U.S. Iraq ranked lowest on the index. Now, who is in charge of Iraq? Oh, that's right. Afghanistan also was in the bottom five, along with Sudan, Somalia, and Israel. Russia, 131st. Commenting on the U.S. ranking, State Department spokesman Sean McCormick said, to realize a more peaceful and prosperous world, quote, oftentimes you have to do difficult things, and a lot of times people don't disagree with them. They don't like them. End quote. He might have added, quote, see, we have to kill people. We have to bomb things. We have to set stuff on fire. We have to produce charred bodies. We have to blow things up. We have to commit acts of absolute murder as defined by the Nuremberg War Crimes Trials. We have to create an entire generation slash class of war criminals. You know, a lot of times you fall down in these lists, but at the end of the day, it is in defense of democracy and the way of life we've enjoyed over the past several decades. So take your goddamn list and put it where the sun doesn't shine. Whoops, I'm Sean McCormick. Thank you. Sorry. A lot of times you fall down in these lists, but at the end of the day, it is in defense of democracy? It is in defense of democracy? Yeah, it's in defense of democracy, of course. Now, I didn't hear that today. Anybody hear that today on any American newscast that we are 96th and Israel's 136th and Iraq is last and Somalia, Sudan, Israel, and Afghanistan are in the bottom five? Did we hear that? Have we heard any? No, I don't think so. Huh? I don't think so. Now, where is Israel involved in murder and mayhem? Europe? No. Asia? No. South America? No. The North American continent? No. Well, where? One place. Where is the U.S. involved in murder and mayhem? Oh, God, don't even start. Don't even start. That's why this list pisses me off. We are more violent than Israel. We produce more corpses and burned bodies and destruction and sadness than Israel could even imagine. We produce more hell on earth in 1 hour than Israel does in a year. Why are they at the bottom? We belong there. That's our spot. Must be a lot of anti-Semites at work at this Business and Peace Institute, right? Seriously, how in the hell is Israel ranked less peaceful by 45 slots than we are? Now, I don't normally come to the defense of Israeli foreign policy because I think it is genocidal, it's apartheid, it's vile. But this time? No, I'm afraid not. Business and Peace Institute, go back and do your numbers. We're number one, not Israel.
Red, white, and blue. People shuffling their feet. People sleeping in their shoes. There's
liberal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. And it's time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. We hope you have a nice bowl of popcorn. Got your jammies on? Oh, I know some of you people on the West Coast, it's still a little bit early, but tonight's Uncle Mike's Story Corner comes to us from CNN. Can you say that? CNN. That's very good. The title of Uncle Mike's Story Corner episode tonight is Mom Forced to Live in Car with Dogs. Barbara Harvey climbs into the back of her small Honda Sport utility vehicle and snuggles with her two golden retrievers, her head nestled on a pillow propped against the driver's seat. A former loan processor, the 67-year-old mother of three grown children, said she never thought she'd spend her golden years sleeping in her car in a parking lot. She said, quote, "This is my bed, my dogs, this is my life, in this car, right now," end quote. Ms. Harvey was forced into homelessness this year after being laid off. She said that three-quarters of her income went to paying rent in Santa Barbara. That's in California, where the median house in the scenic oceanfront city costs more than $1 million. She lost her condo 2 months ago and had little savings as backup. She said, quote, "It went to hell in a handbasket. I didn't think this would happen to me. It's just something that I don't think that people think is going to happen to them. It's what it amounts to. It happens very quickly, too." Ms. Harvey now works part-time for $8 an hour, and she draws a Social Security check to help make ends meet. But she still cannot afford an apartment. And so every night she pulls into a gated parking lot to sleep in her car, along with other women who find themselves in a similar predicament. Uncle Mike needs to repeat that. Along with other women who find themselves in a similar predicament. There are 12 parking lots across Santa Barbara that have been set up to accommodate the growing middle-class homelessness. These lots are believed to be part of the first program of its kind in the United States, according to organizers. The lots open at 7 p.m. and close at 7 a.m. and are run by New Beginnings Counseling Center, a homeless outreach organization. It is illegal for people in California to sleep in their cars on streets. New Beginnings worked with the city of Santa Barbara to allow the parking lots as a safe place for the homeless to sleep in their vehicles without being harassed by people on the streets or ticketed by police. Ms. Harvey stays at the city's only parking lot for women. She said, quote, "This is very safe, and that's why I feel very comfortable," end quote. Nancy Kapp, the New Beginnings parking lot coordinator, said the group began seeing a need for the lots in recent months as California's foreclosure crisis hit the city hard. She said a growing number of senior citizens, women, and lower and middle class families live on the streets. Ms. Kapp, who was homeless with her young daughter 2 decades ago, said, quote, "You look around today and there are so many. I see women sleeping on benches. It's heartbreaking," end quote. She added, quote, "The way the economy is going, it's just amazing. The people that are becoming homeless, it's hit the middle class," end quote. She and others with New Beginnings walk the streets looking for people and families sleeping in their cars. The workers inform them about the parking lot program. New Beginnings screens people to make sure they won't cause trouble. No alcohol or drugs are allowed in the parking lots. Shaw Tolley, another coordinator with New Beginnings, said, quote, "What we are trying to do is we pull bad apples out and we put good apples in the parking lots and really help people out," end quote. Most of the time, the lots are transition points. New Beginnings works with each person to try to find a more permanent housing solution. Ms. Tolley said, "It saddens me when they live in their vehicles. It's not the most ideal situation for senior citizens and families, but it is a reality." Uncle Mike needs to repeat that one, too. It saddens me when they live in their vehicles. It is not the most ideal situation for senior citizens and families, but it is reality. Tolly added, we need to engage this problem. This is reality. John Quigley, an economics professor at University of California, Berkeley, said the California housing crisis has left many middle-class families temporarily homeless and forced them to go to food banks to feed their families. Quigley said, quote, part of the reason why it's so painful in Santa Barbara is there's so little in the way of alternative housing. If there were alternative low and moderate housing and rental accommodations that were reasonably close by, you can imagine it wouldn't have this desperate look to it as people living in their cars, end quote. At the only lot for women in Santa Barbara, it's a tough existence. There are no showers or running water. On the night CNN visited, a half dozen women were in the parking lot before nightfall. Lynn LeBouf, 54, lives in her car with four cats. She used to be in the National Guard and is on a waiting list for government housing, but the wait is a year long. She said, quote, I went looking for family, but I couldn't get them to help me, end quote. As for Miss Harvey, she begins each day by walking her two dogs before going to her part-time job. She leaves the dogs in her car with its windows cracked while she works. It's another chapter in her life that she's certain she'll get through. Her 19-year-old daughter moved in with friends to avoid being homeless. Her other children live overseas, and she didn't want to tell them about her living status. Even if her children offered to help, she said, she wouldn't accept it. Quote, they know me well enough to know that I will get through this. My daughter, especially, Miss Harvey said, is very unhappy. Sometimes she'll cry, and she'll call and say, Mom, I just can't stand it that you're living in a car. And I'll say, you know what? This is okay for right now because I'm safe. I'm healthy. And the dogs are doing okay. And I have a job. And things will get better. Tonight's Uncle Mike's Story Corner, brought to you tonight by your friends at CNN. Oh, my God. It's very difficult to do Uncle Mike's Story Corner, isn't it? Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, is he an appeaser? Would you say Olmert is an appeaser? Guess what? This comes from the BBC. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert has described peace talks with Syria as, his word, exciting. But he warned that those talks might involve, his words, painful concessions. Mr. Olmert said, quote, it is always better to talk than shoot. Earlier, the two sides, the Syrians and the Israelis, revealed they had begun the talks, the first since the year 2000, under Turkish mediation. Previous negotiations collapsed over a possible withdrawal from the Golan Heights, which Israel occupied in 1967. Technically, Israel and Syria are still at war over the area. But Mr. Olmert's office today said the two sides were talking, quote, in good faith and openly. The prime minister told journalists later that the negotiations won't be easy. He noted that previous Israeli leaders had been prepared to make painful concessions, his words, for peace with Syria. And it was reported in April that Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan had been mediating in talks between the two sides. In a statement on Wednesday, Syria's foreign ministry confirmed that the two countries had, quote, expressed their desire to conduct the talks in goodwill and decided to continue dialogue with seriousness to achieve comprehensive peace, end quote. Is Ehud Olmert an appeaser? According to George Bush in his address at the Knesset, Ehud Olmert is an appeaser, just like the people who greased the path for the Nazi Wehrmacht all those years ago. Isn't that what George Bush said? Ehud Olmert, by George Bush's definition, is an appeaser. He talks to the enemy. Does Israel have a more threatening enemy than Syria? Well, let me think. Jordan? No. Iraq? Please. Egypt? Peace agreement. The United Arab Emirates? Get real. Iran? Don't think so. Who, then? Saudi Arabia? No, they do business together. We're running out of Israel's enemies. Who else? Who? Well, there's Syria. And Ehud Olmert is sitting down talking with the Syrians, and the Syrians are sitting down talking with him. Ah, another one of those damned appeasers, Ehud Olmert. But don't go away. There is part two to the Ehud Olmert story. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Defining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
So what do you think? Is Ehud Olmert an appeaser, like the people who greased the paths for the Nazi Wehrmacht back in the 30s, as George Bush indicated in his speech to the Israeli Knesset last week? The people who talk with one's sworn enemies are nothing but appeasers. So here we have Ehud Olmert. Now, these talks have been going on for April. Makes you wonder why nobody told George, before you go into the Israeli parliament and make a further total ass of yourself and the country that you laughingly represent, you better check your facts. Look, Ehud Olmert is talking to the Syrians, and Barack Obama is probably going to talk to the Iranians. Why don't you sit down, shut up, go back to playing with yourself or your Game Boy, and go away, George. Just please. But no one told him that. So, the Prime Minister of Israel is an appeaser by George Bush's definition because he's talking to the Syrians. Ah, but wait. While he is also negotiating with the Syrians, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert is recommending an act of war against Iran to Nancy Pelosi. Olmert proposed in discussions with Pelosi, who is in that country, that a naval blockade be imposed on Iran as one of several ways to pressure Iran into stopping its uranium enrichment program. Son of a bitch! A naval blockade. Now, Ehud Olmert, being a very smart man, I would assume, well, I don't know, is recommending a naval blockade. According to the UN Charter, according to evidence laid out at Nuremberg, or was it the trials against the Japanese High Command, a naval blockade is an act of war. This is what the Reagan crime family and the despicable, contemptible, cowardly disgrace to the uniform of the United States Marine Corps Oliver North did to Nicaragua. They mined Nicaraguan harbors. Mined their harbors. Who died? Sailors? Aboard Nicaraguan warships? No. Fishermen. But I digress. Ehud Olmert wants a naval blockade to be imposed on Iran. Now, on Monday, Olmert had a lunch meeting with Nancy Pelosi and 12 other members of Congress who are in that country to... Olmert told Nancy Pelosi, quote, "The present economic sanctions on Iran have exhausted themselves," end quote. He added that the international community needs to take more drastic steps to stop Iran's efforts to obtain nuclear weapons. It's a good thing nobody knew what Israel was doing when Israel was acquiring its nuclear weapons, or maybe they would have blocked, well, maybe not. As reported by Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, Olmert's suggestions mainly involved continued efforts to isolate the Iranian regime. He proposed two possible courses, first that naval blockade, and the second is to use the U.S. naval fleet to limit the movement in and out of Iran of its merchant ships. Well, that would be obviously the naval blockade. The second option, Olmert proposed, was to put limitations on Iranian aircraft, business people, and senior members of the regime at airports throughout the world. Olmert said, quote, Iranian business people who would not be able to land anywhere in the world would pressure the regime, end quote. Mr. Prime Minister, with all due respect, there are only two countries on earth who would agree to that. Yours and ours. That leaves approximately 180 other countries who would say, are you crazy? And the answer to that, obviously, would be yes. Along with George Bush? What the hell is wrong with you people? A naval blockade and refusing to allow Iranian business people to travel throughout the world. What? Excuse me. I guess I was out of the room. I don't know. Maybe I went to the toilet or something. But what have Iranian business people done to deserve to have their travel restricted? I can think of what Dick Cheney has done. I can think about what Ariel Sharon has... Oh, wait, never mind. I can think about what some other leaders have done, but what have Iranian business people done? What have they done? Members of the American delegation addressing... each other, I guess, spoke about how to pressure Iran. Pelosi herself said at a press conference Monday that a whole series of moves were on the table to prevent Iran from attaining nuclear status. All of this according to Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper. So, Yahweh giveth, Yahweh taketh away. On the one hand, Prime Minister Olmert sits down with the Syrians, with whom they share a bit of a border, and discuss things. Where it concerns the Iranians, commit an act of war against them. That'll calm things down in the Straits of Hormuz. That'll make everybody sit back and go, oh, okay, yeah, we're doing great. Yahweh giveth, Yahweh taketh away. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. about 7 past the hour. Henry Waxman, the House Government Oversight Committee chairman, was holding a hearing yesterday trying to get one of these Bush bastards to answer questions. The Bush bastard sitting at the table was EPA Administrator Stephen Johnson. Waxman was asking Bush bastard Stephen Johnson whether he had ever discussed two ozone rulings with Mr. Bush. Bush bastard Johnson had previously testified that he had discussed California's emissions waiver. Remember, California said, we're going to toughen up, we're going to make our rules tougher than the EPA's, and we can do that because of the Clean Air Act. There is a provision in there that allows us to seek these waivers from the government. California has done this many times over the past 25 years, and each time the waiver was granted. This time, the waiver was not granted. And you can imagine why. So, bringing his rather corpulent ass into Henry Waxman's House Government Oversight Committee hearings, EPA Administrator Stephen Johnson, a.k.a. Bush Bastard, refused to answer simple questions like whether or not he had discussed these rulings with Bush. He refused to say whether he had discussed anything. Now, we all know that this corrupt White House gets involved consistently and constantly, it doesn't make any difference what the topic is or the subject is, in overruling science-based recommendations, whether they come from the EPA, they come from NASA, National Weather Service, the Bureau of Weights and Measures, it doesn't make any difference, from the CDC, everything, as in the Soviet system, must be first political. And if science can fit itself around the politics, good for science. If it can't, goodbye. Bye-bye. Anyway, Bush bastard Stephen Johnson sat at the witness table and refused to answer the questions. So Waxman continued to press. And then, from off camera, comes the voice of this ghoulish Daryl Issa, a representative from California Republican, the highest-ranking Republican present at the hearing, because most Republicans don't attend this kind of stuff. Daryl Issa's voice pops up. This is the scum sucker who got the recall against, what was his name? The governor, Gray Davis. Because Daryl Issa thought that he then could become the governor. No, he didn't. But he did manage to get himself elected from one of the more right-wing neo-Nazi districts in California. And there are several of those, aren't there, Californians? So Daryl Issa, all of a sudden you hear Issa's voice as he comes to the defense of the scum-sucking Bush bastard sitting at the witness table who refuses to answer questions that members of Congress have a right to ask, and this thug has an obligation to answer. At least, that's the way it used to be. But you see, in the Bush regime, no. Screw the people, screw Congress. We are here for one reason and one reason only. Corporate America, don't ask us questions about emissions waivers. So I want you to hear this bit of sound. And the sort of song and dance that you're going to hear from this Bush bastard, EPA Administrator Stephen Johnson, is very routine. He skates his way through Senate and House hearings, confirming to anyone who's keeping track that he's nothing more than a slimy political hack put in as EPA administrator for one reason only, and that's to destroy the EPA. This is the history of the Bush crime family, where it concerns regulations. So, kick back, take your shoes off. I hope you have some popcorn left over from Uncle Mike's Story Corner. And this is from the hearing, I believe, yesterday. You will hear Daryl Issa, Henry Waxman, and Bush bastard EPA Administrator Stephen Johnson.
Mr. Johnson, you admitted you had a conversation with the president on the California waiver. That wasn't an issue. Now you're refusing to say whether you had a conversation with the president on the ozone waiver. What's the difference?
As I said, I have routine conversations with the president as well as members of the executive branch. And
let me get the record straight.
Chairman,
we have
regular order.
The chairman's pursuing regular order. You said for the record that you had a conversation with the president on the ozone layer?
I don't recall.
On the ozone ruling?
I don't recall making that comment myself.
Do you recall making a comment that you've had a conversation with the president on any of these three rules that we've been looking at?
As I said, what I do recall, and I believe is an accurate reflection of what I have said, is that I have routine conversations with members of the executive branch, including the president, on a wide range of issues.
Okay, I'm not going to pursue this because I'll have another opportunity, but it seems to me you're being awfully evasive, and I don't know why you cannot tell this committee whether you in fact had a discussion about this rule or that rule or the other rule. We're only talking about three different rules. Either you did or you didn't. And I don't know why you cannot tell us that information. No one is asking you what was said. We're just asking you whether you had a conversation. And the answer is not acceptable to say, I've had conversations with the president and others on a routine basis, and I'm not going to tell you whether I had a conversation on these subjects. What else do you talk to them about?
As I said, I have routine conversations on a wide range of topics.
In those routine conversations, did you talk about the ozone rule?
Mr. Chairman, I must insist that we go to regular order.
Gentlemen, is not in order at this time.
Mr. Chairman,
did you have a conversation?
Mr. Chairman, the rules of the House.
The gentleman will cease.
Mr. Chairman, the rules of the House call for an alternating 5 minutes.
The gentleman will cease.
On what time does the chairman speak?
The gentleman will cease.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman, on what time does the chairman speak and ask these questions?
The chair has a prerogative to pursue for the record a clarification.
Mr. Chairman, where in the rules is that stated? Could I see a copy of the rules that allow for this said? The rules of the House, Mr. Chairman.
We will furnish you with a copy of
Chairman, there are multiple members that could yield you time. I would ask that you...
I will have you physically removed from this meeting if you don't stop. I want to know an answer to the question. Did you have a discussion with the president on any one of these three rules?
Mr. Chairman, as I said, I have routine conversations with the president and the executive branch on all, on many matters before the agency of particular importance. And I don't believe that it is appropriate for me to get into the details of what those conversations are or not. I think that's an important privilege, that an opportunity.
Are you asserting an executive privilege?
Not at this time, sir.
Okay.
You see, this is so typical. This is what it looks like when you have a political party that has become nothing but an absolute whore, no offense to sex workers, to corporate America. People like Daryl Issa and this Bush bastard EPA Administrator Stephen Johnson, they do what they are told, and they do it because corporate America puts them in these positions of power. Who do you suppose put Stephen Johnson in the position of EPA Administrator? I'm not saying who appointed him. Who put him there? The coal industry? The oil industry, the automobile industry, any industry that is hell-bent on making sure that whatever breathable air we have left is utterly, absolutely destroyed. But when you have someone like Bush bastard Stephen Johnson and an absolute bottom feeder like Daryl Issa, members of the same party, working like this, you heard it, working to defeat, absolutely defeat and destroy the idea that government is to be responsive to the people, that government is there to improve the lives of people, that's not what the Republican Party is about. It's about destruction, death, cowardice, destruction, death, cowardice.
The highest and the hip, so hypocritical, high crimes and misdeeds.
host, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
You know, just as a postscript to that sound, Daryl Issa is a car thief and twice has been held on weapons charges. Nancy from Ohio reminds me. And, this rat bastard belongs in jail somewhere. He really does. He's a thug, a punk. A thug, a punk. That's the reason he's in the Republican Party. And another postscript. The House Minority Leader, Republican John Boehner of Ohio, has reacted angrily to Waxman's gaveling down Daryl Issa yesterday during that hearing with EPA Administrator and Bush bastard Stephen Johnson that we just played for you. Now, here's the statement from John Boehner. Quote, Chairman Waxman's behavior in the Oversight and Government Reform Committee yesterday was appalling and beneath the dignity of the House. His abuse of power is further proof the House Democrats have broken their promise to run the most open and honest Congress in history. Moreover, his outrageous threats, and intimidation, I'll have you removed from the hearing room, against a fellow committee colleague were not only unbecoming for a member of Congress, but frankly, unbecoming for anyone who hopes to be treated as a professional. Chairman Waxman owes an apology to Mr. Issa, his committee colleagues, and anyone who witnessed his shameful behavior. But more importantly, he owes the American people an apology because these types of heavy-handed threats have no place in the people's house. End quote. Boehner, you pissant. How dare you say something like this? I mean, come on. Oh, my God. Oh, these Republicans. How? You can't even use that kind of language coming out of your smarmy mouth about what kind of conduct is acceptable in the people's house. When did it become the people's house, Boehner? Huh? How long have you Republicans treated the U.S. House of Representatives as the people's house, Boehner? You freak. The people's house. Ah! God have mercy! So there's Boehner's response. I will be so glad when Republicans are nothing, which will happen during the next session of Congress and the next presidency. They will finally be reduced to what they're supposed to be anyway. They're the stuff on the bottom of your shoe after you've walked around Midtown Manhattan that just won't scrape off. They need to be sent back down. You know, that reminds me of a movie I saw, a Chinese movie, The Sent Down Girl. Was that it? The Sent Down Girl? That's the sent out to the country during the Cultural Revolution of the 60s, the great Mao leap into the abyss. And the Sent Down Girl was sent out to the country to relearn humility and, getting close to the land and how not to be an intellectual. Boehner and Issa and the entire Republican Party need to be equivalents of the Sent Down Girl. Was that the title? God, I hope that's the title. Oh, I know five or six of you will immediately correct me if it's not the Sent Down Girl. But that's what these scummy, not for re-education, they just need to be interred somewhere, interned somewhere, maybe out in the country, maybe in Arkansas, maybe in one of those old, I have an idea, those camps that Oliver North decided to refurbish and rehabilitate in case people demonstrated in the 80s against our murderous policies in Central America. Wouldn't that be ironic and very appropriate? Load up these camps with members, Republican members of state committees, state legislatures, the federal government, people who are Republicans in the House and the Senate. Wouldn't that be glorious? And then we could bring in some Chinese interrogators to ask them questions and maybe introduce them to a little water dribbling on their faces or something to get them confess their crimes and their sins, whether those crimes and sins were against the rest of humanity or their own country or their political system or whatever little boys they might be buggering at the time. Huh? How about that? Ah, I'm losing my mind. Never mind. Just kidding. We're going to take a break and then come back and take some phone calls. And the number here is 800-989-1480. I'll get it right. Someday I'd like to be a talk show host. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Way. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. By the way, I realize this is way in advance, but a week from tomorrow night, we're going to have Professor Mark Crispin Miller will be on this program again. We've had Mark on, what, maybe four times over the past 5 or 6 years? So a week from tomorrow, we'll be talking about that, you know, reminding you. I bring it up now because Greg in San Antonio, Texas, sent me a YouTube video, a seven-minute-long video of Mark Crispin Miller talking about Directive 51 and some other things that we're going to play in its entirety tomorrow night. And then we will have him on the program Thursday week. So we'll remind you of that. This is very quick. This is from June 25th, 2003, San Francisco Chronicle. Republican Representative Daryl Issa, the driving force behind the effort to recall Governor Gray Davis, was prosecuted with his brother in San Jose, California in 1980 for allegedly faking the theft of Issa's Mercedes sedan and selling it to a car dealer for $16,000, according to court records. Issa, in a phone interview with the San Francisco Chronicle, blamed his brother for the car theft, which was detailed in documents on file in Santa Clara County Superior Court and which have never been made public. Issa said, "I do not steal." Oh, and by the way, he's from San Diego. And it goes on and on and on. But Issa is a bastard, an absolute bastard, a useless but a Republican. But I'm sorry, I repeat myself. All right, let's go to some phone calls. If you're interested. All right? Okay. That's good. I always have to check with Kathy. Len in New York City is calling in, listening on the internet. Hey, Len.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Okay, thanks. You know, I bring you up every once in a while when I'm talking about the elections, and, you know, I say, you know, someone I listen to a lot, you know, saying maybe it would be better if McCain won, because things are getting so bad that, you know, if the next few years a Democratic president's in charge, they're going to say, see what happens, and we're going to lose it.
Well, you know, it was probably 6-7 months ago I suggested that, and it was immediately deluged by people that said, well, what about the Supreme Court appointments? And I had to point out that the scum we have on the Supreme Court now were put there because Democrats are afraid to resist most Republican presidents, especially afraid to resist Bush. So I don't know. I'm afraid, though, that McCain would probably get us into a nuclear war I'm also afraid that Hillary Clinton might. I think Barack Obama would be the least inclined of the three. I'm not saying totally no, but the least inclined of the three to unleash that kind of hell on this planet.
No, I agree. You know, and what prompted the call was you're reading the story about the woman sleeping in the car.
Living in her car, yeah.
Yeah, living in her car. And I found the story, and one particular paragraph was like the most eye-awakening, where you read, there are 12 parking lots across Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
It's just Santa Barbara.
Right.
That have been set up to accommodate the growing middle-class homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
There are now we're defining people who can't afford to live in a home still as middle class.
It's astonishing. And the other, the kind of acidy fringe to the story is, once again, you know, accommodations are made. And I'm not trying to be a jerk here, but accommodations are made for middle class, and I'm assuming this is true, whites, for their sudden discovery that they are homeless because of circumstances beyond their ability to deal with or cope with. We've had homeless.
You are not middle class if you're homeless.
Well, that's true. But what I'm saying is how many homeless people in this country have had to deal with sleeping on a pile of garbage? When was the last time Santa Barbara or any city anywhere accommodated just your average homeless person, you know, veterans, people of color, so-called bums, people who smell bad, people who don't have cars to sleep in. How long? There's that subtext to the story for me. Going with the main story, it's horrifying. It's horrifying. That was always, wasn't it, Len? Wasn't that the bulwark against the howling dogs of poverty and homelessness was being in the so-called middle class, right? Gone.
All I can do is, you know, repeat. There's one other guy. Well, not just one other guy, but there's, you know, this isn't an advertisement, but there's someone who runs a brokerage firm. His name is Peter Schiff, and his website is europac.net.
Europac?
EuroPac.net. Short for Euro-Pacific.
Europac.net, okay.
Who's been warning about, you might want to have him on. I mean, he is a Ron Paul, you know, he's a fan of, you know, no government versus, you know, he's a libertarian. In fact, I think his father went to jail for tax evasion.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been warning about the upcoming crisis, which, you know, if you listen to this guy so far, everything he's been saying has been coming true. We are only in, like, the third inning.
Mm.
So that's why I'm worried that, you know, the Democrat coming in is going to be in there for, he's going to be a relief pitcher when we have no balls to throw anymore.
I hear you. It's it is very dangerous. That's why I can't understand this. Well, I can understand it. I don't mean to sound like a naive, but it's hard for me to process this desire on the part of Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton to take over the controls of this country in the condition it's in. For what you just said, what all of us who are aware of what has happened in the past 7 years are aware of. I don't get it.
If you feel like you can fly a plane, you prefer to try to do it than let the guy sitting at the controls, you know, go down with a heart attack.
I guess that's it. Maybe there is motivation in both of those Democrats, Clinton and Obama, to not let us crash and burn. It's just with the cynicism I've developed, it's hard for me to to think very long in those terms. But anyway, I get what you're saying, Len.
Anyway, I'll let you go on with your show.
All right, thanks, Len. Appreciate you checking in. Take care. Douglas is calling from Sacramento, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Douglas.
Hey, Mike and Kathy, good to talk to you again.
My
glad
pleasure.
You're feeling better.
Thank you.
A couple of things. Santa Barbara is one of our more enlightened cities. I haven't heard anything about up here.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing anything comparable to help out. And there's got to be people like that here, because this is one of the foreclosure capitals of the state, from what I've been hearing.
Yeah, so have I. We have a massive problem here in the Atlanta area. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And as far as I know, there's no such thing here either. It's the American way. If you can't cut it in the middle class, you're a failure. You know, and you only have yourself to blame. It's because you didn't work hard enough, or you know, the fact that your kid might have gotten sick, or you developed some kind of a problem. Don't want to hear it. You know, you should be making $5 million a year running a money losing corporation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, generally, what they do with the homeless around here, they just sweep them up every so often. The sheriff department will get the jail trustees out there and break up their little campsites.
Yeah.
And let the trustees keep whatever they want and stop the rest.
Yeah.
That's in the our local free paper.
You know, this reminds me so much of the Reagan years, doesn't it, you?
Oh, God, this is way past that.
But I mean, that whole attitude, and it's developing again, that the homeless are evil bastards. I remember when Rush Limbaugh first made his massive debut around the country because his program was free. One of the things he talked about were what he referred to as urban homesteaders, people who slept on warm air grates in the Northeast at night because they wanted to. And his attitude was when he would look out the window of WABC, where he worked at the time, he always had an inclination to dump hot coffee out the window onto these poor wretches, as he called them, who were camped out on the sidewalk. And it became fashionable during the Reagan years to hate people because they were homeless or unemployed or poor. Remember? I remember. Oh, my
mm-hmm.
God. Yeah. So here we are again.
Yep. And the our point on the list, you were talking about that?
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, you haven't gotten into just how screwed up that list is. I mean, if Afghanistan's at the bottom, doesn't that include us?
Well, yeah, and Iraq. Two of the ones at the bottom are Iraq and Afghanistan. The other two are Sudan, or the other three, Sudan, Israel. I don't know why Israel is down there. I hate their
foreign. Again, I mean, we finance them. Shouldn't we be included? I mean, how come we're only at 100? Or 97 or whatever.
97, yeah, I know.
We should be at 140 squared or cubed or something.
Or to the fifth power. I hear you. Douglas, I got to go. Thanks, pal.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
All right, appreciate you checking in. I need a glass of wine. Yeah, that's the ticket. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Watch the war. And every morning it upstages. Everything I know. Everything I know. It's the American way. The new world order. We hold these truths to be self-evident. Well, this is evident, yeah. And the American way. You must give and I shall take. I will tell you what is moral and what's just. Because I want.
It is 10 before the hour. Thanks to the crew, Ian Huff, who engineered, Billy Foster, our technical director, Ben Birch, podcast manager, Bob Alexander, our resident philosopher, Bridget Wolf, our writer-in-resident, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, and Catherine Bay, the executive producer. And as I always mention, at this time of the night, I guess I should bring this up a little bit earlier. We would love to see you become a member or a founding member of NovaMRadio.com. Go to the website, and the information is there. And also, if you really want to have some fun and freak your friends out, get some of that Malloy stuff that they're selling there. T-shirts and sweatshirts and lingerie. Just kidding. Back to your phone calls. Mike is calling from Cleveland, Ohio, listening on XM satellite radio. Hey, Mike.
Hello, Mike Malloy.
Yes.
Mike, when Senator McCain says Barack wants to unconditionally negotiate with Iran, sir, I am not aware of any sound bites of Barack actually saying unconditionally negotiate. And by saying unconditionally, I feel McCain's trying to peg Barack as having an inflexible position.
That's a very astute observation. But you see, they're trying to point out to the American public that, first of all, Barack is not white. Secondly, his father is not from here. Third, he will coddle international terrorists. And fourth, vote for me. I'm John McCain. That's what the campaign is going to be about. You, all of us, had better get used to it, because that's what they're going to be talking about.
And, Mike, if they ever say Barack has an inflexible position, he can say he has conviction, like one of Bush's favorite mantras.
Right, right. Yeah, you know what happens to things that are inflexible? They break. Right?
I agree, sir.
All right. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. We'll talk again. Edie is calling from Montgomery, Alabama, in the absolute buckle of the Bible Belt. Hey, Edie.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I may sound a little funny. I'm on pain medication.
Oh, well, lucky you. No, I'm just, I hope it's nothing serious.
Well, it doesn't feel too serious right now.
Well,
but I was thinking, you're absolutely right about the parking lots given over to homeless people.
Yeah, yeah.
Middle class people, used to be middle class. There's a book out now called The Missing Class.
The Missing Class.
The Missing Class, and that's the people that are still hanging on by their fingernails to the middle class, basically,
mm-hmm.
And those that are now living in parking lots. And it reminded me of when the white boys started shooting up their schools, and how it was just wall to wall on the media, and of course it was a terrible tragedy. But the inner city people have been killing each other, you know, by the dozens, you mm-hmm. know, almost every day,
and
all over this country.
And it's hardly a story.
Yeah, it might get a mention on the evening news, maybe. You know, the local news.
Yeah, well, you know, in local news, if it bleeds, it leads. They love to show inner city folks shooting each other and death and destruction. But you're absolutely right. Drugs were never a problem, especially cocaine. I remember back in the 80s, cocaine was not a problem until all of a sudden it started eating away at some of the nice middle class. Yuppies, they were called back in the 80s, who just couldn't resist ramming stuff up their nose.
I remember.
And when once it starts affecting white people, whoa, wait a minute, call the police.
I know, but let me leave you on a kind of a laugh.
Okay.
Daryl Issa spent over $1 million of his own money to get rid of Gray Davis.
Right.
Thinking he was going to be governor,
right.
And then Arnold swooped in and took it.
that's right.
So.
Well, I don't think Californians would have elected a car thief anyway, but...
but I didn't know that then.
Yeah.
Good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are.
Hey, have a nice evening, Edie.
You too.
All right, take care. One of our favorite callers, Paula in Bayonne, New Jersey, emails me tonight. Hey, Mike, regarding what to do with Republicans, I was just kind of doing a little bit of... mind wondering about where to lock them up or what to do with them. Paula writes, Mike, I say we sentence them to abject poverty. Their assets should be seized, redistributed to the women who are living in their cars in Santa Barbara, and force the Republicans to live in their cars with their rotten families for the rest of their miserable lives. We'll spare their pets, though. We are good liberals, after all. Paula in Bayonne, New Jersey. That's a good idea. I hope I'm not surprised in the election coming up in November. I hope the American public has had enough of this Republican criminality, and not just their inability to govern, but their refusal to govern and the fact that Republicans only want to get elected so they can turn the reins of power over to corporate America because that's what they are paid to do. And I just hope that Americans understand that what the Republicans have done in the past 7 years, the destruction of every regulatory agency that is put there not to hamper commerce or business, but is put there to protect the very lives, the health of American families, children, men, women, old folks, young folks. That's what the regulatory agencies are there for, because without them, ask Sinclair, well, you can ask him, Sinclair Lewis, but without the regulatory agencies, predatory capitalism will kill us all. Wait a minute, what am I talking about? That's what's going on now. Oh, never mind. I just hope that America has come off the drug that we've been on for the past 7.5 years. Well, not you and me. I'll see you tomorrow night, True Seeker. Thanks for hanging out with us. Take care, okay? Seriously, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.